This is Digital Story Podcast number 548, September 6, 2016. Today's theme is, And Then It's Over. I'm Derek Story. So today's show is going to be a little bit different than the shows that I've been doing lately, mainly because some things have happened, and I've been thinking all week on how to approach the subject. So I'm going to give you the backstory, and then I'm going to talk about the theme, and we'll take it from there. So we're just going to kind of do this show together this week. So here's the backstory. I was listening to macOS Ken last week while I was driving to work, and it's a podcast that I listen to while I'm on my way to the office. Ken Ray was talking a bit about Scott Shepard. And I don't know if you remember or not, but Scott Shepard used to do the intros and the outros to the show. And I'll talk a little bit more about his involvement with the Digital Story in a bit. Anyway, so Ken was talking about this crossroads in his career as a podcaster, where he used to do the news spots on Inside Mac. And for a long time, whenever Ken referred to Scott Shepard, it was always, like it was a tough falling out. We don't really speak now. I'm glad I'm away from that situation. It was always in that context. But this time it was a little bit different. And he was talking about Scott in the sense that Ken's career, in large part, the success of it moving forward, a lot of that came out of the decision that he made way back when to work with Scott on Inside Mac. So he's telling the story, and I'm kind of thinking, well, why is he telling this story? I mean, I had a sense of why, but I wasn't exactly sure. And then he said, Scott Shepard has died. And I always thought that we would, sometime, connect and bury the hatchet and move forward, but now that's not possible. So here I am driving in my car listening to the show, and I'm going, whoa, what do you mean Scott Shepard has died? I used to work with Scott. I considered Scott a friend. And even though we stopped working together, probably 2 years ago or so, maybe a little bit longer, we parted on good terms. I mean, I wanted just to have complete control over the show. Scott had helped me for a long time with this podcast. But it got to the point where I felt like I should be able to do everything. I should be able to do the production. I should be able to do the ins and outs. I should be able to do all the editing, everything. And so I took it upon myself to learn all the ins and outs of audio recording, which has worked out well for me because as such, I now do all my own production work for my Linda videos and all that stuff. So that was a skill set I needed to learn, and I knew that. Scott and I stopped working together, but that's all it was. It was stopped working together. And I know he moved on, and I hadn't heard from him, and I hadn't heard anything about him until the Ken Ray podcast. So I was thinking, I need to mention Scott and tell a little bit about how he helped me get started in podcasting. And then, run a few bits by him. He did so many shows. I mean, he has done so many shows. Inside Mac Radio, Inside Analog Radio. He did work for Nick Software. He did work for Rangefinder, WPPI. I mean, just you add them all up and it's hundreds, if not thousands, of shows that he did. So I start doing a little research, and it didn't come as easily as I thought it would, especially for someone who had done so much work. I wanted to run a piece, for example, from Inside Analog Radio because I thought that was kind of cool, and Scott got back into film way before I did, and I would go to iTunes, I'd pull it up, and it wouldn't play. And same thing happened for all the other shows, all the other podcasts that were in iTunes. Same thing happened for his website. Same thing happened for practically everything except some stuff that was on YouTube, which wasn't, his strong area. It wasn't an area where he did the most publishing. But that stuff survives because that is on a Google server and not on his own servers. And so what has happened is that either when he passed or right before he passed, his servers went down, probably stopped paying the ISP bills, all that kind of stuff. And all of that work that he did is now not accessible. And so now I had another thing going through my head. First, there is Scott helping me, all that kind of stuff, the things that I learned from him. And then there's Scott, the creator, whose stuff in an instant, or many instances, who knows how long all of this took, is visible in the sense that you can see all the titles. Like, for instance, if you go to iTunes right now and you search on Scott Shepherd Podcasts, you can see Inside Mac Radio, you can see Inside Analog, all that, but the shows won't play. And that's because iTunes points back to the original server. It doesn't cache them or keep them on any Apple servers or anything like that. So then a second theme started, you know, bouncing around in my head over the course of the week. And that theme has to do with digital giveth and digital taketh away, and it can do so very quickly. And I was going, okay, I'm uneasy about this, but why? Why should I be uneasy about this? You know, this is how it's played. These are the rules of the game, right? If you have all of your stuff just living in one place or another place, and that's it, and then it goes away, then the rules of the game say that stuff goes away. And, you know, for all I know, Scott could have this stuff archived somewhere on hard drives or some sort of media, and it still could be accessible. But I found it interesting that when I started researching his passing, that I could not find anything on Google. Not a word about his passing. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not there, but I did two separate hour-long sessions looking for his stuff, trying to find podcasts, trying to find something about his passing, and I found just little tidbits, just the smallest things during all that searching, and I'm fairly decent at this. So that was interesting to me. So then I started thinking, okay, how does this all apply to us? And let's take it beyond Scott's life for a minute. I'll come back to Scott in a bit. Let's take it beyond Scott's life for a minute and just, you know, sort of think about this. First of all, the first question that I ask is, well, how important is it that our stuff survives us? Well, I mean, I guess that depends on every person, right? I mean, I'm not saying there has to be a rule that when we move on to the next plane, that, you know, all of our stuff has to be here for everyone, because, you know, quite frankly, most folks don't care, right? You know, let's just be honest about it for a minute. Most folks don't care. But what if you wanted some of your stuff to survive you? Then how do you go about that? Is digital format the way to go? If it is, then how do you store it? You know, where do you put it? Where do you keep it? What if, like Scott's case, what if you don't have a lot of family or anyone close to you to be the guardian of that content? You know, then what do you do? Do you leave a will or something? Do you put it in a safe deposit box and point to it, you know, with a will held by a lawyer? I mean, how does that stuff go about, you know, being taken care of? And I don't really know the answer to that question. I know, for example, in my own case, this podcast, Digital Story, is on, you know, my own server. So if I were to stop, let's say, paying the bills for that server, then even though I would still be listed in iTunes, no one could listen to those shows. The website would go down, you know, all that kind of stuff that I discovered when I started looking into Scott's life. Now, I do have things archived on hard drives and so forth. I do have family. I don't have a plan. But I guess, you know, that'll be one of the things that I probably should work on one of these days. And I do have people to implement it. But then it did get me thinking, well, okay, what is the plan? I mean, what should the plan be? Do I have all, 500 plus, and, Lord knows how many there will be by the time I quit podcasting. Do I have all of those episodes archived and available? Do I just pick the ones that I want? Do I go the Brett Weston route and only cherry pick the stuff that I want left behind and make sure everything else is destroyed? When we're creating a lot of stuff, whether it be, audio or movies or photographs or whatever, that content can really add up over time. I don't know the answer to that. And then I also don't know really how to leave it. I mean, I have stuff on Drobos right now, and we're going to pick up the Drobo Diaries next week. I'm not going to talk about it this week. This is kind of a different show. How functional would Drobos be 50 years from now? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think anybody does. It's a proprietary system. So it works great for me now, but over the long haul, what happens with all of that? And it just really got me thinking about this whole situation as it pertains to our photographs, our movies, our music, whatever content we're creating. And what do we do with that? And is it important that it survive us? And if so, how do we manage it? And I think it's something that each of us, needs to answer individually. Now, if you're listening to this show and you're 20 years old, you're probably not going to be that interested in this topic. Rightly so. You've got other things to do right now. But if you're 60 years old, maybe you're more interested in this. And if you're 80 years old, then you're probably very interested in this. And, that's the way this stuff sort of goes. Now, you probably have heard me talk about doing 12 prints a year, where you take 12 photographs of yours that you think are really good, and you make archival prints of them, and you put those prints away, no matter what happens. But over a course of 10 years, you have over 100 images that you think are good that are in an archival format that is device independent. There you go. You could be done. Everything else photographically could go away, and you've got those 100 images sitting there that anyone can enjoy. I like that idea. I've always liked that idea. I like the idea of things being device independent. And to tell you the truth, in the digital photography age, we shoot so many photos, so many images. I sort of feel like, in my case anyway, most of those need to go away. You know what I mean? I mean, I was looking at some shots that I did just yesterday. We went for a hike. We climbed Mount Tam here in Northern California. It's a great hike. We went about 1,600 feet elevation gain, got to the summit, and just had a great view. But over the course of that hike, shot a lot of digital photos that I was looking at just today. And then I shot some film shots. And, that's the way it goes with me a lot. I'll shoot a lot of digital photos, and then I'll shoot, a handful of film shots. And I have a lot of shots that are very similar in the digital side of things. I don't need all those shots. I mean, pick the best shot there, right, out of that series, out of each series, and hang on to that, and you have 6 shots for the day, which is probably all you need. And then, everything else can go away. But we don't really have a system for doing that, do we? A system for kind of filtering through all the stuff that we shoot to just take the cream. Now, I know that we have star ratings and all that kind of stuff, but the fact of the matter is that is a very inconsistent and a very imperfect system, because it's based on mood. It's based on context. So let's say that you took all of my 3-star shots. Well, that's going to leave a lot of stuff out that over time might be important. That's only a 2-star shot. And there's going to be a lot of stuff in there that, just doesn't need to be in there, because it was relative to that day or to that photo shoot, not relative to my entire life, not relative to my career as a photographer. And, that's where the rub comes in. I don't know how I would rate things that way, because I don't have perspective in the moment of, you know, what would be important 20 years from now and what wouldn't be. I mean, I can give you a top of mind guess, which is, you know, people shots tend to have more importance as time goes on. Your artistic stuff, hate to say it, probably not as much. Unless you turn out to be a great and famous artist, which most of us will not. So the whole thing is just really, it's a question for me without an answer. But nonetheless, I think it's an important question to think about just in terms of managing your content. You know, like next week, we're going to get back to the Drobo Diaries. That is an important gig. You know, my using Drobos to back up my work, at least in the short term. And I mean, you know, like within a 10-year period, those things are very important. I don't think they really are the answer for super long term. But I wanted to put it out there because I'm going to go back to Scott now. I thought it was interesting that someone who created so much content in the digital age, suddenly it is very difficult to find just a few choice pieces of his work, which is what I wanted to do to share with you. Now, I have a bit right now that I'm going to play for you. It's only a couple minutes, minute and a half, something like that. And I got it off YouTube because it was on an independent server. Got it off YouTube. And it's a short interview that he did at WPPI back in 2008. I chose this in part because I could actually find something, but also it was very Scott. You know, if you listen to the rhythm of the interview and to the way he handles it, that is the way that he did things. And I wanted to share that with you just so you could hear, you know, something that this man created.
So right now I'm here with Fernando Berserto, and he's doing a really cool track here at the WPPI Plus Extra Tracks here at, of course, WPPI. Hello, Fernando, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. So tell me, what are you doing here with your class sessions here at WPPI Plus?
What I'm doing is a class titled Finding Sentiment, Wedding Photography. And it's basically about showing people how to work with people, how to communicate, and most of all, how to capture the emotions on a wedding day. I feel that's really important.
What do you think people are missing as a wedding photographer to capture the emotion and actually what's happening in the day itself?
Well, the most important thing is just to anticipate, but more importantly is how to communicate with everybody, how to talk to them, how to use your body language, and just how to work with them.
What do you think is a good tip for someone that wants to capture more emotion and actually get more involved in the actual intimacy of the day? What's a good thing they can do is like one tip?
Communicate. It's all about communication. If in fact you have that communication, you become in control of the wedding day as well as the people. And then on top of that, you'll be confident with those things. You'll become more confident.
Yeah, this is cool. So tell me about your website. You're doing other seminars. Tell me what Fernando's up to, your website, what you're doing.
Fernando's up to a whole lot. I'm real excited just to be a part of WPPI. Just to have a great class back here, all these people here. It's an honor to be here. This is the best organization, but I'm doing a bunch of workshops. SEworkshops.com. You can always log on to that and check out what I got going on.
Fernando, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Right on, guys. How about the class here? Woo! Woo!
All right!
Okay, so that is Scott Shepherd. That is very much Scott Shepherd. So I want to tell you a little bit about his relationship with the digital story, because I think it's important. I'm one of those people that he helped out way back when. So when I first started thinking about doing this podcast, which was in early 2005, I knew how to do radio in the sense of I had been interviewed a lot over the years because I was a book author. I worked for O'Reilly Media. I spoke a lot. I did all these things. And so I was interviewed a lot, but I had never done my own show. And so when I decided that I wanted to do my own show, I go, okay, that's cool. I know how a good show should sound. I have some idea of the structure of a show, although if you listen to my first podcast, you would question even my knowledge about that. But at any rate, I had a feel for one side of it, but I did not have a feel for the side of, you know, how do I actually pull together the equipment to record it? What do I use for software? How do I produce it? How do I get it onto iTunes? How do I do that whole side of it? Scott and I had worked together on stuff through O'Reilly and through his Inside Mac show and all that kind of stuff. And we were friends then. We knew each other. I had been on his show a number of times, all that. And I told Scott, I said, hey, look, I'm thinking about doing this podcast. I'm really excited about it, but I'm also nervous about it because there's a whole bunch of stuff I don't know how to do. And he says, well, like what? And I said, well, like everything, you know, that involves the technical side of audio production, for one thing. And he goes, no problem. I'll help you with it. And I said, seriously? He goes, not a problem at all. I absolutely would love to. And so then he helped me kind of decide, you know, what equipment to buy and how to record it. And I would do some test recordings and send them to him. And he would go, you really need to be in a different kind of room. You need to dampen the sound. You need a pop screen. You know, just fight me this whole list of things that I was doing wrong. And I go, all right. And so I, you know, get the pop screen. I'd, you know, put a blanket up behind the mic. You know, I do all this kind of stuff. And you go, okay, well, that's a little bit better. We would go on and on. And over time, I would improve what I was doing on the capture side. And then I'd hand it off to him, and then he would do everything else. He would do the production. He'd add the intros and the outros. And, you know, the show was more basic then. I mean, we would have a standard introduction, same one every week. And then I would come on, so that first introduction would start to fade, and then I'd come on and just start the show. I would just talk straight for however long, 30 minutes. And then at the end of the show, we had a standard outro that Scott also recorded. And so then he would fade into the standard outro at the end of the show, and that would be it. So it was very straightforward. He didn't have to do any audio editing. We didn't put any, you know, music bits in between. We didn't have any segues, none of that stuff. So it was pretty straightforward. But I'll tell you, you know, just having someone that could do that and then make a nice sounding MP3, and then he would hand it back to me. I would add the tags, the metadata, and then I would push it up and publish it. And I had been working, you know, with my guys on that. And in those days, it was Mark Levitt and David Lentz. And David is still working with me to this day on the show. And they helped me with that part of it. And that's the way we went for a long time. And then I started getting tired of listening to myself kind of yammer on and ums and ahs and you knows and all that stuff. So then I started learning how to edit the audio. And so then I would edit the audio file, and then I'd send it to Scott, and then he'd put the intros and the outros on it, and off we go. So again, we went for another long time that way. And over time, by the way, we could get away with this in 2005, 2006, 2007. Podcasting was just this kind of this geek sort of thing. And, you know, people were doing podcasts. I remember I'd listen to Adam Curry do podcasts, and he would be driving a car in Netherlands, smoking a bong and recording his podcast while he was doing that, you know. So, yeah. So even though my show was very crude, everything was pretty crude in those days. And so you could get away with it. But over time, you know, podcasting became more sophisticated, and we had to grow with it if we were going to survive. I started doing some editing and so forth. And then I really wanted to take the show up a notch and do, you know, more sophisticated things with it. Scott had been doing this for me all along for free. He never asked for money, never charged anything like that. And so when I decided I wanted to take it up a notch, I want to do some things. It's going to be a little bit harder for you. Let's work out a thing. Let's agree on a price. I'll pay you so much a month. And then, you know, you take on, you know, this little bit extra that I want to do. And he said, fine. Well, when we started doing that, you know, I think it went outside his comfort zone a bit in the sense that, you know, it was fine when it was a favor and he could just bang it out really quick. But now I was getting more involved. And quite honestly, the amount of money that I was paying him wasn't that much, you know, relative to really what he could get somewhere else. He wasn't turning it around as timely as I wanted to. And I don't think it hurt our friendship, but it certainly hurt our working relationship a bit. Things just weren't running as smoothly as they were. And, you know, I finally decided that, hey, if I want to do certain things, and if I want the show to sound a certain way, I really need to learn how to do this. I've been doing this long enough now to where there's no excuse for me not knowing how to do every step of the production process. One day, I told Scott, you know, this is going to be the last month that we do this together. I'm going to just take it on my own from here. I really appreciate everything that you have done for me, helping me get started, taking me, you know, under your wing, coaching me, doing the show for all those years, and I just really appreciate it. He said, yeah, it was my pleasure. You're my friend, and I wanted to do that for you. And so we finished out, and then I took it on myself, and then I had complete control, and then I could start publishing on midnight the night before, and I could start doing this and start doing that, and if I wanted to do something special, I could do that. If I wanted to put music here or there, I could do that. You know, suddenly now it was totally my show. And in all honesty, for both me and for Scott, I should have taken that on earlier. I should have done that way before I ever did. But you know how inertia is. It's just, quite honestly, I had my hands full trying to think of what I was going to talk about, you know, writing the script, all that kind of stuff. It was a good move for me to take it over. And that little bit of money that Scott was being paid, he was no longer being paid. And I didn't realize at the time, but I actually think that hurt him. And I was thinking, such a small amount of money that obviously he could make it up somewhere else. But I noticed that he was having a harder and harder time getting gigs. There was this trend that was happening in the business. And this trend affected me and a lot of other podcasters, where businesses really pulled back on sponsoring shows, and they wanted to either do this or that. He was doing shows for Nick Software. Well, of course, Nick was gobbled up by Google. He was doing shows for WPPI. He was doing shows for, you know, all these different folks, and that money began to dry up. And then at the same time, the sponsors for his shows also began to dry up and decide to spend their money elsewhere, something that I have seen firsthand. It became harder and harder for him, having not as diverse revenue as someone like me has. I mean, I have my Linda teaching. I do get these contract gigs. I am a professional photographer. I do work in that area. I have money coming in from different angles. And at the end of the month, most of the time, it just magically adds up to be enough to pay the bills. But I know he was running into a situation where that wasn't working. And I sensed that his health was declining also. So, you know, that was kind of hard for me, but I wasn't in touch with him. What's really weird for me is I don't know how the story ended. I don't, because I can't find any information on that. And so at this point, I would say, if you know, if you were in contact with Scott and you know how the end played out, I would like to know. And even if it's just something that I am to keep to myself, I'm fine with that. But it's weird for me not to know the end of the story after I worked with this man for so many years, after he helped me out and after he produced so much work. It just seems not right not to know how it all ended. Two sort of themes here. One is the story that has to do with Scott specifically, and then the other story, which is just in this digital age, how digital content does need to be managed if it is to survive. Because it's clear to me that if you don't take steps to do that, and if it is important to you, then it won't just automatically happen. Because the minute sites close and servers go down and all that stuff, if that's where that stuff lived, then it really does become just a memory, and poof, it's gone. What I'm going to do right now is I'm going to run Scott's close to the show that he used to do. And just one last nod to you, Scott. One last tip of the hat. Thanks for helping me out. I really appreciate it. I hope you're in a better place now. All right. I'll be back next week with a regular show. Until then, have a good week. Here's Scott.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story. We'll be right back.